Support for Radioactive comes from the members of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Ellsworth on the Bucksport Road, with Sunday services at 10:30 a.m., affirming and promoting respect for the interdependent web of existence and the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
The time is just about 3:59, and you are tuned to WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. And this is Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal with Amy Brown and Meredith DeFrancesco for October 11th, 2007. A gas leak in Cape Elizabeth on Monday led to evacuation of neighborhood residents. Last week, a house exploded in South Portland after an excavator severed a nearby gas line. The Public Utilities Commission investigator issued a notice of probable violation regarding the gas lines being marked in a reckless or negligent manner. Back in April, a gas line overpressurized in Saco, forcing the evacuation of 92 homes and businesses as well as a residential care home. And a natural gas leak early Wednesday evening prompted Bangor Fire and Police officials to temporarily block off a section of Main Street near the Hollywood Slots construction site. In light of these and other safety concerns, we'll get an update today on the status of the large-scale liquefied natural gas facility development proposed for Down East Main from Linda Gottfried of Eastport. But first, something sort of fun and scary.
First, we're joined by Will Rice, Secretary of the Board at the organization Food and Medicine. They have just started the Workers Center in Brewer. He is here to talk about an economic haunted house this Halloween weekend. So it seemed appropriate that we also have with us WERU's local pundit, Alan Sprague, for the first segment of our program. Welcome, Alan Sprague.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for joining us on the other side of the glass
figured
here.
You'd bring in somebody with no sense.
And welcome, Will Rice.
Thank you very much.
Well, first, talk a little bit about what Food and Medicine is, so we have a context of this Halloween haunted house.
Food and Medicine began before I got there, several years ago, actually about 5 years ago now, in a response to a lot of layoffs that happened around 2001, 2002 of mills up and down the Penobscot Valley. And there was a concern that as people lost their jobs, they also lost their union membership, and there was an attempt made to give them an organization they could hold on to and a way that laid-off workers could help each other. So it was started then with providing food and heating oil to laid-off workers from workers who still had jobs. It's since grown and expanded from that into a general social service organization, I guess, supporting a strong social safety net and government programs that help people in need.
Great. And quickly, what is the new Workers Center?
The Workers Center is basically an attempt to, along the same lines, it's one of the phrases we use is a union for non-union workers. It's an attempt to let people know in all these new service jobs, whether it's fast food or retail, what their rights are, how they can better themselves through collective action.
Right, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, but I'd like to turn over to my co-patriot here, Alan Sprague. Would you like to ask the man about what's happening the weekend of October 27th?
Yes, we are coming up on the Halloween season. Why don't you tell us about what's going to be happening on the 27th?
As a newcomer to the organization, I noticed the building they use, which is in Brewer, has kind of a serpentine layout to it, and it occurred to me it'd be a good place to have a haunted house, but I thought, since it is an economic organization, why have skeletons and black cats when you can have things like the Pit of Pension Panic or the Hall of the Two-Headed Healthcare Hydra? So we take the idea of a haunted house and have people confront some of the fears of the modern economy.
Right. So there's no safe quarter in this house.
No. No. There's none.
So I'm interested in your middle-class squeeze.
Mm. That actually just occurred to me because there is a closet that connects two of the offices, which is already kind of narrow. We're going to put something in there to make it even more narrow but pliable. And on one side it will say rising costs. On the other it will say stagnant wages. And the point is that middle-class families have to struggle to make their way in the world.
Right. So it's going to be – it's almost like a one-way door, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's we have to decide exactly how – tight to make this thing because we have people of all sizes going through it, I guess. But it's going to be pillows or bubble wrap or something. Yeah. I don't want to give away all of our secrets.
Right. It just seems to me that the middle class squeeze seems to be squeezing a lot more people in downward direction, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, yes. And in this case, though, people do get through it. There's a kind of hopeful quality to this. And at the end, people do triumph over all these problems, and they do it through working together.
Right. Good. So they end up without a deficit at the end, huh?
Yes.
Unlike reality, huh?
Yeah. And I want to just make clear that someone said, someone sort of unkindly said, well, this is almost like the house that gives away toothbrushes instead of candy for trick-or-treat. And I said, well, you should know this is not going to be long, boring speeches on economic theory. It's going to be people in monkey suits jumping around and pratfalls and a lot of crazy things going on. So the educational part gets sort of just slipped in, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think kids will enjoy it even if they don't know what's going on. There's enough stuff going on that little kids especially. It won't be very scary, but it'll be kind of eventful.
Good. Good. You're not going to nickel and dime people on their way through to
get anything up. No. In fact, it's free admission, so they're not going to be charged for anything.
That's great. So that's going to – what time of the day is going to start?
It's going to start at 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 27th, and it's going to go till 7. People should call to make reservations kind of like you do at a restaurant because we're going to have tours, relatively small groups of people so they don't take up too much room or get knocked over by something. But what the first thing will start at 4, and we're going to go till 7 if we're lucky enough to have that many groups.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think daylight savings starts that evening or the – Sunday morning.
Yeah.
So it'll still be light out for any of the young kids.
For the early ones, yeah. That's sort of the idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's excellent. And what's the directions of this house again?
It's at what's called the Solidarity Center. It's in Brewer. It's the street address is 20 Ivard Street. Now, that's a little tiny street that's just off of South Main Street in Brewer. A major landmark is St. Teresa's Catholic Church. That's on South Main Street. There's also a public park right there and the road that goes between them. Yeah, it's right on the Penobscot River. It's a beautiful setting, by the way. That's one of the reasons I had for wanting to do this was to try to introduce more people to this setting because it's on a bluff overlooking the Penobscot. It's very, very beautiful. But it's very easy to find. It's just a few blocks south of 395 off of South Main Street in Brewer.
That's interesting. Seems like some of the current political strategies coming down from the president seem to be on a bluff too, don't they?
Yeah. We hadn't thought of that one. We probably should have president's bluff. We don't have that.
Well, at least you have a bank handy when you have a bluff. So
yeah.
So that'll be great for all those kids. I think that'll be.
I think the kids. Fun. I think it should be like the old Bullwinkle cartoons or SpongeBob SquarePants, where I think adults will enjoy it at one level and kids at another.
Amy. She's just over there on the other side.
Leave the punsters to the pros.
So for more information, where can people call?
People should call 989-5860. That's the food and medicine office.
Great. And again, the date?
The date is Saturday, October 27th from 4 to 7 p.m. But don't just show up. You should call ahead to have a slot for you to – you and your family to go through this thing.
And about how long does it take to go through then?
I wouldn't think more than 20 minutes or so. It's not a very involved thing.
It's not going to be a coin slot that they have to go through, is it?
No.
The fun starts at the beginning with all the forms they have to fill out to get a slot in the thing.
No, we try to avoid that. This is trying to not add any more pressures to the middle class or working class people. It's supposed to make it as simple as possible.
Yeah. Great. Sounds great.
Any other questions, pundit?
No, okay. I think I need to go.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us. And I'll just maybe ask Will one more question, but feel free to let the door.
Thank you.
Don't let it hit you on the way up.
But
if there's creaking, he can stay, but he had to go. We welcomed him. He probably would have interesting questions for our next segment on LNG, considering it has a lot to do with boats. But thanks again, Alan Sprigg, host of Boat Talk and Extra Large Soul Show. And quickly, before we go on to our next segment, Will, we do want to talk a little bit more about the Workers' Center. If you could talk a little bit more about that. Recently established the kickoff right after the James McMurtry concert.
That's right.
And sort of it's still in the building stages. Talk a little bit about
where
you're at.
It is. It's still – I think one of the philosophy behind it in a sense is that it should be created based on what the people who join it want it to be. But there have been some things that have happened. Organizations like certain unions have adopted certain days and put on programs, like the Maine State Employees Association did a program about health care. The Communication Workers of America did something about the proposed sale of Verizon landlines to Fairpoint. There's been a labor film night.
And meaning when you said that these were topics that were being discussed and people could come and learn
That's right. And in fact, on the healthcare issue, they were actually filming people who had stories about problems they'd had with the healthcare industry. But they're building a library. We're going to have more film nights. We're going to start certain projects, like the whole concept of just cause, whether you can be fired for any reason at all by your employer, whether you have some rights or should have some rights to some process before you get fired. We're also going to be looking into what happens to the children of union workers when they head out into the world and find fewer union jobs available. So it is very much in the building stage. And some of your listeners may have gone to the McMurtry concert on Labor Day. The Workers' Center opened the next day, and it's still slowly building. And we'd be happy to have anyone call that same number if they want to get involved.
And again, that this was something started in conjunction with Food and Medicine and the Central Labor Council.
That's right. It's a joint project of the Food and Medicine and the Eastern Maine Central Labor Council, which is a conglomeration of local unions in the Eastern Maine.
And again, just to emphasize, though unions are involved, the premise of a workers' center is offering resources for organizing and education for non-union workers.
Some of the services that you would get from your union if you have a union job, we're going to try to provide. In addition, ultimately, trying to help people organize a union themselves, which is very tough to do these days. But even if that's not possible in a given situation, provide some of the education and support that a union provides union workers.
And so there are hours that have been established for
that's right.
different events. And how can people find that out, find out more about the events happening, or how to get involved?
Right. The number they should call is 989-5860. For information, generally the Workers' Center is open Tuesdays and Saturdays, Tuesday mornings and Saturday afternoons, early evenings. There's been some personnel changes, so that's a little bit in flux right now, but they should call ahead 989-5860 for more information.
And so some of the future programs that you're hoping to...
Well, as I say, we're going to do more film nights. We're going to have labor education nights where we have speakers come in. We're going to have book discussion groups. People will read famous books about the labor movement and discuss them. And also, I think unions and other organizations will continue to, as I say, kind of adopt a day and run their own programs then using the space that we have over there on Ivory Street in South Brewer.
Okay. Any other issues that are on the horizon with Food and Medicine specifically?
Well, we're still working on the issue of Verizon and Fairpoint Communications, and we're very much supportive of the registered nurses at Eastern Maine Medical Center, who are now in negotiations and may be having a one-day strike next week.
They're meeting right now, in fact.
Yes.
Have you heard anything from that meeting?
No, I haven't. This is apparently a big day, though, in terms of working with a mediator. And so we're very supportive of that. And our newspaper that we publish three or four times a year called Solidarity News is going to be covering that very closely.
Excellent. Well, any other things that you'd like to bring up at this
No, just that I think people will really enjoy this. As I say, it's not like going to it's not like going to an economics seminar in college. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think both adults and children should enjoy it. And for little people with little kids, it won't be too scary.
Again, that's Saturday, October 27th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Solidarity Center at 20 Ivers Street in Brewer, just off South Main Street behind St. Teresa's Church.
Yep.
Thanks for joining us, Will Rice.
Thank you very much for having me.
Great. And now on to our next story and a guest that we have live on the phone. We turn to... You're welcome to stay if you'd like or go. We now turn to an update on the proposed liquefied natural gas import terminals on Passamaquoddy Bay. Two companies are vying for licenses from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, and have been pursuing state environmental approval and the support of Maine residents. The Oklahoma-based company, who calls itself Quaddy Bay LNG, has been pursuing a location at the Passamaquoddy tribal land at Pleasant Point. This would include a pipeline to tanks in the town of Perry. Washington, D.C.-based company Downeast LNG has been trying to establish itself in the town of Robinson. Considerable citizen opposition to the projects have been demonstrated by Maine residents, Passamaquoddy tribal members in both Maine and Canada, and Canadian residents, besides vigorous opposition from the local and provincial governments of Canada on Passamaquoddy Bay. The federal government of Canada has made their opposition clear as well, including their intention to deny the large LNG tankers from traversing the precarious Head Harbor Passage. Concerns about safety, environmental impacts, and economic impacts on fishing and tourism are included in opposition arguments. Two notably prominent sticking points are also the opposition of the town of Eastport and the lack of a supportive water suitability report from the U.S. Coast Guard. We have with us by phone the coordinator for Save Passamaquoddy Bay Three Nation Alliance, Linda Godfrey, to bring us up to date on a number of changes that have been occurring in both Downeast LNG and Quoddy Bay LNG's trajectory. We are sorry not to have adequately coordinated with Passamaquoddy tribal member Vera Francis, who is one of the plaintiffs who is suing the Bureau of Indian Affairs for its conduct involving Quoddy Bay LNG's application. In mid-September, however, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit overturned a previous decision and ruled the Passamaquoddy plaintiffs can continue to pursue their case against the BIA. We hope to have an interview specific to this in the near future. Linda Godfrey, however, I'm sure can touch upon this as she brings us up to date on the issues down east. Welcome to the program, Linda.
Thank you, Meredith.
There's a lot to cover that has been transpiring over the past few months. But
you made a very good summary, however.
Well, thank you. I know we haven't scratched the surface still. So just to contextualize and remind people how it came to be that so many companies were focusing in on Maine. There has been sort of a mad rush throughout the country since some regulations have been changed in 2002, and we saw a great increase of LNG prospectors. Can you just contextualize a little bit with that?
Yeah, this is a process that's been kind of like a gold rush mentality for about 5 years, when there was a desire to add liquefied natural gas to some of the considerations the country's making about future energy needs. And the many of the same people who've been involved in the oil industry got on board with this and began rushing the coastline of America, all along the coastline from Maine to Washington State, to locate places where they could try to establish these kinds of terminals. And so that set Maine in motion also, where at the beginning of this there were some industry desires on the part of some well-known international oil companies, energy companies, that started looking at the southern part of Maine in now what is called the LNG graveyard. There were about six attempts in the southern part of Maine up to about mid-state to try to locate some terminals there. All of those failed, and is kind of the last attempt. There are two developers. You've named them. You've identified their locations who are attempting to locate terminals in Washington County.
Now, they're both in the FERC process right now, either were in the middle of or about to be in the state environmental process looking for approval from those regulatory agencies. Downeast LNG was in the middle of the process and then asked to withdraw because of some reasons, and then was denied that, but now looks like they may be withdrawing again. And now Quoddy Bay is asking to postpone their process. Can you individually, or however you want to connect the two, talk about their involvement in these processes and what has been coming up for them that has made them want to withdraw, temporarily withdraw?
Probably the best thing to do is to let listeners know that there are two places where decisions are to be made about these terminals. One is a very much a state process, and the Department of Environmental Protection, and through their Board of Environmental Protection, is the group that will act on behalf of the citizens of the state of Maine to decide whether or not these terminal operations can be in Maine. And then the second group is the federal group, that is the federal regulatory agency you've discussed, and they will decide if these projects are suitable to be permitted. So we have to remember that even if they are both permitted, along the way, that still doesn't mean they're going to happen. But those are the two requirements, the state and the federal level. So both groups are involved in the federal level. That's a lengthy process, and they have many things that they're doing, safety, security, navigation, environmental, endangered species, a great list of things that they have to provide information about at the federal level. At the same time, they are providing information at the state level. The place, the three topics where the state has an ability to say yay or nay to these operations are in the area of shoreline, submerged land lease agreements, and air and water quality. So both of them, down east, started first. They put forward all of their materials, and when one puts forth their materials, they are saying, their project, they are saying to the Board of Environmental Protection, we have everything ready, scrutinize what we have, we are ready for public hearings, we will supply, we have supplied all the information that is needed for you to make a decision. So they proceeded, and during the summer we had a week-long conference here that involved the public and involved the proponents and opponents, and a great deal of information was brought forward. It is that process that has not concluded yet, because there are still some small issues that the board wished to have down east respond to, and it is also during this whole process that this rather surprising outcome has occurred, where Down East has asked to withdraw their proposal and do some resubmitting after the end of the year. So that hasn't been decided yet. The Board of Environmental Protection had already turned down their request to withdraw, and then there was an incident that happened at the FERC level, where Down East Pipeline, their pipeline that they proposed from Robinson to Baileyville, has been turned down by the federal process. So that has opened up some more reasons, according to Down East, why they should be able to withdraw and kind of jumpstart, restart, go back and redo their proposal to the state.
And the pipeline was going to be through Moosehorn.
That's right. Their pipeline involved a 35-mile route, a significant part of which was through Moosehorn Wildlife Refuge, and it is that portion that has been denied by the federal government. So on October 25th, the Board of Environmental Protection will hear these issues that Down East has asked to bring forward, and they will also hear an appeal. Down East has attempted to remove about a dozen of the public presenters that made their statements during the public hearing, and so those two issues will be heard by the Board of Environmental Protection on October 25th.
Now, who did they want to be removed from this process, and why?
They wish to have people who were making statements against the proposal, about, as I say, 12. I don't know that I've counted them exactly. They contend that these people are too expert, that they have information that not only was some of it spoken, some of it was written, both of which are ways that the public can communicate with the Board of Environmental Protection. And they contend that there were some materials that were submitted as part of people's testimony that they object to. And they object that some of the material did not have specific implications to the environment.
Can you give examples? You don't have to give names, of course, but what some of these people's positions or testimony was regarding?
Yep. There is a person, for example, who is a scientist who's been in the Passamaquoddy Bay area for a number of years studying invasive species. And she made available the report and material that she has been gathering in her opinion about what might occur if there are more invasive species coming from out-of-country tankers. That would be one of them. The local land trust that has some concerns about where they're putting certain things and pipelines and other things, they wish to have that struck. So those would be two examples.
And am I also correct to say some who had testimony specific to marine mammals?
That's right, yes. There were some, especially some Canadian scientists who had information about marine mammals, endangered species, critical habitat, whales, and they wish to have that information struck also.
So the BEP will be looking specifically at Down East LNG's request to have these people struck and also withdraw to reapply in hopes to reapply. That meeting is October 25th, you said?
That's October 25th is
now,
when they will look at that.
Tell us about where Quoddy Bay is in their state environmental process.
Well, Quoddy Bay filed their materials with the state, which would be the same thing that Down East did, which says we're ready. We have everything ready. We have our materials complete. We have everything that people can scrutinize, so we wish to go forward. And so that process has been unfolding for a couple months. And on October 16th, next week on Tuesday, there was to be what is called a pre-conference hearing where all the parties to these issues come together, and the Board of Environmental Protection lays forward the rules by which the hearings will proceed and answers any questions about the procedure. So it is the official start of the public part of this process, although materials have been submitted for a couple months.
But they've asked for a postponement.
They have asked for a postponement. They've asked to for an extension to not start this process until after January. They say that they have a problem with what is called the waterway suitability study. This is a study the Coast Guard is responsible for. And the Coast Guard has said because of Canada's position on this issue, they are not able to complete the work that they have to do to say whether or not the waterway is suitable. And as long as that work is not completed in a recommendation made by the Coast Guard, that stalls the whole FERC process. So that is one of the issues that Quoddy Bay has said is the reason why they are unable to proceed at the moment. And they also say they have what they call FERC deficiencies, which are, I think, not enumerated in their materials. But as you say, those are two issues. Though those are the two they have chosen to bring forward. And they also say because Down East has had some obvious trouble most recently with their pipeline, they are having to look at some of the things they're doing related to the proposed pipeline. Because as you mentioned, Meredith, the pipeline that Quoddy Bay proposes, while Down East put theirs through the Moosehorn Wildlife Refuge, that's their proposal, Quoddy Bay proposes to put it immediately under Highway 190, which is the only way in and out of Eastport, and would cause some very significant realities for the people of Eastport as well as the people of Pleasant Point and Perry.
Now, you live in Eastport, and it's true that the manager of Eastport, Bud Finch, has been quite vocally opposing or at least not supporting this project.
Well, the City of Eastport and the Port of Eastport are both interveners in the Quoddy Bay process, and the way they have presented their statements related to it and their role in this process is to say they were elected, they were hired to protect the people and the property of Eastport, and it's their opinion that because of the waterway route, because of the idea of the pipeline under 190 and all of those put a great deal of Eastport in radiation zones, safety zones, exclusion zones, all of these things that follow this kind of a dangerous industrial project, that they cannot adequately secure the safety and the security of the people of Eastport with the way Quoddy Bay has proposed this project because of the location of the land they propose to use.
Because of because any evacuation or indeed any access to the island is, as you said, that road which would go right
That's exactly.
We have just a couple of minutes left or a minute left. If for anything else that you want to bring up of particular significance during this time in these processes?
Well, I think that it's good for people to know that this is a huge process. That, as you mentioned, and I hope you do get a chance to talk with Vera about the lawsuit that the tribal members have brought forward against the Bureau of Indian Affairs that looks at whether or not the lease for Quoddy Bay is legitimate at all. The Coast Guard, Canada, you made it very specific. Canada has said no, they are not going to allow these transport of their waters. We've got pipeline issues, the coastal zoning issues, endangered species, shoreline, fishery, habitat, emergency management, safety. I mean, these are huge projects and huge issues. And so when people think it's a simplistic thing of bring on anything for any purpose, there are many, many implications, dangers, concerns that need to be raised. And obviously not only is the opposition raising it, The Bureau of Environmental Protection is very well prepared, and they've been very diligent in doing their work on behalf of the state. And now it's really the developers also who are saying, we don't have our act in order, and in fact we want to withdraw or we want an extension, which is a clear indication that they've got some pretty significant problems.
Just very quickly, when's the meeting at Quaddy Bay, where Quaddy Bay is asking for their extension?
That meeting has been postponed, so that one has not been re-announced yet. It was supposed to be next week, and that one, I believe, has not been re-announced of when that one will go forward. There are legal things being filed right now.
Okay, and we should mention that on the website savepassamaquoddybay.org, there is extensive documentation from all sorts of coverage, from all sorts of perspectives that has been put on that website.
So. That's right, and also the website www.wetakecareofourland.org is the site that can help people understand more about the tribal opposition to this and their interaction with the lawsuit related to the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
We also have an audio archive of an Indigenous Voices program that Meredith produced. If you go to the WERU archives or WERU.org and click on archives and then go to Indigenous Voices, there was a recent program that was produced that had a lot of testimony, public testimony, including some from Canada. Do you want to say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, at a public informational meeting that Quaddy Bay LNG held, and there was a lot of words from people from many different perspectives, including Passamaquoddy, Canada, and Maine. Thank you very much for joining us today, Linda Godfrey, coordinator with the Three Nation Alliance, Save Passamaquoddy Bay Three Nation Alliance, and she lives in Eastport. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for keeping track of this.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Radioactive, a grassroots environmental and social justice news journal. I'm Amy Brown.
And I'm Meredith T. Francesco.
And that's all she's going to say. You can reach us by emailing news at weru.org and put radioactive in the subject line. And you can catch our archived programs by going to the website weru.org and clicking on audio archives. Stay tuned. Hightower is coming up next, followed by Free Speech Radio News, Democracy Now!, and a night of great music here on your community radio station.
Radioactive is made possible in part by Artisan Builders, providing environmental design, construction, and renovation for homeowners and local businesses since 1992. 525-7740.